tremendous installment of Morning Reload. From very high above, all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, usually firmly ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns and from the depths of the Middle Swamp. But this morning, my friends, I'm not in either of those two places. The lovely Christine and I traveled to Cleveland, Ohio over the weekend to visit one of her good friends. I know, strange place to travel to, but hey, when you gotta go visit a friend, you gotta go. On this morning's program, I have a fantastic interview with Wyoming GOP Chairman Frank Ethorn. Joey Carrente also sat in on the interview with me, which we did last Thursday at our state's capital in the Middle Swamp. It's a fascinating discussion. Here it is.
I'm joined today by Wyoming GOP Chairman Frank Ethorn. Frank, welcome to the program.
Well, howdy, David. Good to be back.
Also sitting in with us is Joey Carrente.
Working hard in your free time so you don't have to. Doing everything I can to keep the cantankerous side alive.
Frank, I know it's early in the session, but what are your thoughts so far?
Lots of chicanery happening, lots of trick plays. We see it every year. I think that the moderates are desperate to bankrupt the state. Just look at it. It's the largest budget the state of Wyoming has ever seen.
It's huge. And the funny thing is, when it came up on the floor, they were all like, well, no, this isn't the largest budget. You can't count all the spending. This is just the budget. General funds, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, they're trying every argument they can to try to mislead Wyoming citizens. And frankly, it's really starting to irritate me.
But we're conservative with people's money. And this is a conservative and responsible budget for the people. Sorry, not the people of Wyoming, for Wyoming people. I hate that term.
Yeah. So, Frank, the reason I wanted to sit down with you is, first, you just finished up a State Central Committee meeting over in Lovell. And I'm assuming that you got a list of legislative priorities from the meeting. So first, I guess, why don't you tell us how the Central Committee meeting went, and then we'll talk about some of the priorities of the grassroots.
Well, you know, the Central Committee meeting went really smooth. We've got a lot of veterans and then young people that follow their leadership. So as far as procedure, timing, order of events, manners at the meeting, for example, all good and well. The Central Committee is running smoothly, and with our emphasis on represent your people at home when you come to a State Central Committee meeting is shining through. So those principles are working well.
Excellent. Well, I know we've got a number of counties that have, shall we say, struggled to have meetings back home. So it's good to hear that there's more of an emphasis on representing the people back home.
You know, that's correct. We had a informal motion, if you will, to ask the Central Committee representatives from all the counties, how often are you holding meetings? And there were a couple counties that were not holding regular meetings, didn't intend to, don't plan to. And so the reminder was, now we're up upon caucus and convention times. Those are required meetings. You don't have those, you don't participate in state convention or national convention. Your voice is not carried from your county through the state to the national. And so what we see now as a result of having to overemphasize the importance of those caucus and convention dates, it appears every county has got their respective meetings scheduled.
Excellent. And I guess while we have the time, can you quickly explain, like, what's the purpose of a caucus, a county caucus, and how does it work, and then the county convention? Because some people may not be aware of how that whole process works.
Absolutely. The word we're trying to get out to educate folks is that caucus is the time where every and any registered Republican in the county at the time of the call of the caucus can come and get involved. Any opinions, directives, any of those ideas that need to take place politically can take place at the caucus. That's why you don't have standard leadership there. You elect a caucus chairman, which could be the county chairman, but it certainly isn't required. And so you can meet precinct by precinct. You can meet as an entire whole caucus for the entire county. But the point is that you hear from folks that aren't regularly engaged throughout the year. They're not your elected leaders. It's every registered Republican. And then hopefully a lot of those Republicans get appointed to subcommittees to bring work forward to be proposed at their respective county conventions. Platform proposals, bylaws, resolutions, and also who is interested in running for state convention delegate and national delegate and alternate.
Okay. Now, Joey, you were the Carbon County chairman for what, 2 years, 4 years?
Almost 5 years, yeah. And it's interesting that now that I'm not, and I'm also not a voting member of the State Central Committee, all of a sudden the courtesy and the function is improving. I'm gone and it gets better? Come on, Frank.
So why don't you tell us, Joey, like how it works at the county level, since you were pretty much the guy running the show in Carbon County for a while.
Well, the precinct caucuses, which can be a county caucus, like Frank said, but it's really the multiple caucuses together at the county level. So it's all precinct in my mind. And the county convention planning, it's all a backdating process. And you really got to wait for the state party to say, hey, we have scheduled and been approved for our state convention with the RNC on these dates. And then there's kind of an algorithm. You have to backdate within so many days of the state convention. These things must happen. No later than these things or these dates must you submit stuff to the state for convention at that level. So you just backdate everything. And it's a difficult process to get all that math quickly, and it needs to happen quickly. What makes it more difficult is counties that sit around and wait for those dates to begin planning. So I always recommend have your plans for precinct caucuses and county convention ready to go with a very fluid location and date setting. Because the real function of those things is to make sure your people, your precinct representatives, and your registered Republicans are aware of what is the content of what needs to be discussed. We're talking about bylaws. We're talking about resolutions, which are timely policy issues, where our neighborhood, our county, our state party stand on things that are happening right now. The platform gets discussed. What are our fundamental principles? And it shouldn't be that big of a discussion because these are timeless truths. And if they're timeless and true, they shouldn't change that much. But there are things that happen that make, hey, this is no longer a current, a timely issue position. It needs to become a solid fundamental principle of conservatism in our party. So it'll go up to the platform level. And I think this is work that needs to be done year-round in preparation for the grassroots involvement in the structure, function, and principle making, not just the rulemaking of the party. So it's not a lot of work if you spread it out over the entire two-year cycle that you have between convention cycles and elections. But if you're sitting there waiting for the state party to tell you when your dates available are to plan anything, that's when not only does the process become difficult, but really the involvement of the people and the education they need prior gets missed. So,
well, let's talk about the platform for a little bit. Now, sitting in the gallery of the legislature, you know, and I'm knowing the platform as I do, it's pretty easy to pick out who's even read it and is just saying that they agree with the party platform and who is like completely in league with the Democrats, which, by the way, Frank, if you'd like to know, that's 31 so-called Republicans on the floor. Frank, could you just tell our listeners, so what exactly is the party platform? And I mean, it's easy softball question, I know, but it seems to come up as a big matter of debate after the session because you have a lot of people back home in their own counties approaching their representatives and senators saying, I'm reading the party platform and your voting record doesn't seem to jive with it. So I guess first, what's the party platform? And just talk to me about it.
The party platform, as Joey described correctly, are the timeless principles. They are the fundamental principles that guided this country. They come from our founding fathers. And I will tell you, how did this get into form in the Wyoming Republican Party? It started in Converse County. There was a chairman named Kathy Russell who followed my time as leadership there. And she said, we need to distill this down and make it a one-page, very readable, very clear, very understandable, applicable document. So that's where the process occurred as early as 2016. By 2018, we had pared a multi-page document called the Platform Set of Planks into 19 or 20. And that's close to where we're at today. And as Joey said, those don't change because they are timeless. There are small modifications we make. So the importance of grassroots input is incalculable because we need folks to say from the grassroots up, from the smallest political subdivisions on up, and direct the state party officials that, no, our timeless principles are not changing. Don't mess with them. They are there to remain into perpetuity.
And we're not talking about complicated things here. It's like we believe in life. We believe that family values, that the best family is one that's a man and a woman together in a home. I mean, none of these things ought to be controversial. But we hear politicians, senators, representatives all saying, well, you know, I mostly agree with the party platform. So how do you deal with that, Frank? I mostly agree with the party platform.
Well, I think the most effective way to try to clarify and educate is the planks are self-evident. The Founding Fathers used that term. That's why the platform committee really doesn't argue over the substance. It's just the wording. And there is some effect to try to bring it to modern culture, which is usually rebutted and defeated, so that it does remain in its current language. So when it comes to the platform, we have how many Republicans that push back and try to say it's a relative document? And we say, no, it's a black and white sound document.
Well, it's like the Constitution. You don't get to pick and choose which parts of the Constitution you agree with and which ones you don't. You either follow it or you don't. And for me, that's what the platform is. And again, it's nothing that's too controversial. I mean, either you believe it's wrong to kill babies or you don't. So at your most recent meeting in Lovell, you probably came up with some legislative priorities, things that the grassroots is concerned about for this legislative session. Let's go ahead and talk about a few of those.
Absolutely. These are important, and actually we discuss, debate, and get those passed usually in the fall meeting prior to the winter meeting. So we had passed these at the November meeting in Newcastle of 2023. And I actually have the 2022 list in front of me, so it's going to be slightly different. We added to it this year, but number one has remained election integrity, and that includes revisions needed in Title 22.
Well, we've got the Title 22 guy sitting right across from us.
Yeah, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. We'll do a whole show on that later, I promise. But the rest of the legislative priorities, because the legislature's in session right now, we really need to focus on the whole list.
I agree.
Because they're all important, but I believe the decision was they appear in no particular superfluous or prioritized, or these are all number one priorities of the party.
Right. And so they had been prioritized before. This year we decided that they're all number one priorities. They all need to be addressed, and they were mailed to every Republican lawmaker to make their priority as well. That's what we ask them to do.
Did you get any of them returned to sender?
mostly just non-answers, but then we've got a lot of responsive Freedom Caucus electeds that are very in tune. Many of them are 90 and 100% platformers. They follow it to that degree, so none of these were a surprise to them, and we find a broad support for them, these legislative priorities. More of them include, we don't want to see legalization of marijuana. And when we state that there we're not seeking any new protected classes of people. That really includes all areas, but we're mostly focusing on LGBTQ. We don't want to see the playing field get leveled. Wyoming is the equality state. We believe it's well intact. You can't police it in every single form in every place, but it's a principle that we believe in, and we believe it's followed quite well in Wyoming. Property taxes.
Big one.
Yep, big one there. People are going out of business. Older folks are losing their homes, their property. The property taxes are becoming confiscatory. And we've also got a sign-up effort. If any of you have seen the petition out there, this is sometimes how we have to get legislation done. When the legislators are not willing to pass policy, we have to follow them up with signatures.
Well, they're willing to pass policy, Frank, just not anything that's going to help Wyoming citizens.
We'll get back to the program in just a second. But first, an absolutely outrageous profit timeout. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you're in the market for an outbuilding or a garage, or maybe you need a roping arena so you can do all that rodeo stuff when it's 20 degrees below zero outside, or perhaps you might need a big giant warehouse for your business, the two guys you need to talk to are Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings. They are the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do a much better job than anybody else. So it doesn't really matter what type of building you've been thinking about. Give Nick and Jesse a call. Their phone number is 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. Well, it would appear, my friends, that winter has finally decided to show up, which means you are going to have to go out in it. And one of the things you want to make sure that doesn't get frozen off and you get all sorts of horrible frostbite are those cute little toes of yours. Now, the way that you can prevent all of those unfortunate circumstances is to get you a pair of socks from the Buffalo Wool Company. They are, by far, the finest socks that I've ever put on my feet, and I guarantee you that they'll keep those little tootsies of yours nice and toasty warm. To get you a pair, go to their website, thebuffalowoolco.com. Trust me, you're not going to be disappointed. The following advertisement was paid for by Reed Raisner for Senate. Who's the leader for the Senate? It's Reed Raisner. He's the one for you and me. Cheer his name so happily. R-A-S-N-E-R. What's his name? Reed Raisner. R-A-S-N-E-R. What's his name? Reed Raisner. Reed Raisner for the Senate. With the voice so strong and true. Bring a change term limits to Reed Raisner's here for you. If you're thinking of buying or selling a piece of property, you need a real estate agent that you can trust. That agent is Rebecca Bextel at Compass Real Estate. She is an expert in the Wyoming real estate market. She's lived in Jackson for over 20 years and has her fingers on the pulse of all things real estate in the Cowboy State. Give her a call. Her phone number is 307-699-3519. One more time, that's 307-699-3519. And now, back to the program.
So let's talk about just a couple of those a little bit more in depth, because we do have a guy who's, I would say his voting record is pretty solidly conservative, who's totally in favor of legalizing marijuana. So there's a libertarian argument to be made. Well, you know, the government needs to stay out of my business, and what I do in my own home is, they shouldn't have any business in that. But why would the legalization of marijuana not be a conservative idea? I mean, why is that a bad thing?
You know, we have this debate quite often, where is the line between where a conservative ends and a libertarian begins, or vice versa? And I don't think we're clear on that. So when it comes to many of these libertarian ideas, most of us, our government should be hands off. Church and state, great example. However, it's unclear where we're going to land on these specific issues, just because a lot of folks see benefits in getting the government out of your business. At the same time, they see what would happen if all illicit drugs, for example, were legalized.
Oregon is what would happen.
Right. So we can see the neighbor to our south. Look at the costs of legalization that have been wrought on Colorado. And so I think that's one of those gray areas. But, you know, the party has settled on so many black and white areas that the gray areas are diminishing. They're on the decrease.
Well, for me, one of my favorite authors is a guy named John Stuart Mill. He's considered by many to be the father of libertarianism. And he's got this thing called the Harms Principle. And it literally says that the only acceptable use of government force is to prevent harm to another person. Now, he's not talking about, you know, the harm that we see in the media today, right? That, oh, I'm offended, therefore you harm me. He means actual harm, right? Your person was harmed, your property was harmed, something like that. So when you look at a lot of these principles, like, and it works perfectly with the legalization of marijuana. If it could be proven that that's not going to harm another individual, then we might be able to agree with it. But the problem is you can't keep drugs out of school. You know, in fact, when I interviewed this representative on my program, he said, well, why do you have a problem with somebody sitting on their couch smoking dope? I said, well, the problem I have is that it's not going to stay in his house. His kid is going to get a hold of it, and it's going to end up in the high school. And so a lot of these things, when you're talking about liberty principles or libertarianism, I mean, it's easy just to point back at him and say, show me how that's not harming another person. And that's easy case with that. Joey?
Well, I'd say, you know, being a member of the Republican Party here in Wyoming, fairly active for quite a few years, I've heard a lot of the arguments about, and I agree with the legalization prohibition that the party's pretty much taken as their gospel for marijuana. But there's also been arguments that I think are pretty legitimate about a decriminalization concept, which is it's still the law. You still shouldn't have it. If you get caught with it, it's going to get confiscated. But the decriminalization mindset says we're not going to tie up our court time. We're not going to tie up our prisons and go through all that taxpayer money. We're not going to pay for your drug courts and your special treatment. And you're also not going to be able to be on welfare. You're not going to get – it's basically kind of like the Colorado principle. They legalize recreational use. What we're – the arguments I've heard that seem legitimate is we're not going to waste any more taxpayer dollars dealing with you, rehabbing you, but we're going to consider this recreational. So if you have the money to recreate, we're cutting you off the public dole. No more food stamps, no more LEAP, no more low-income housing. But it's still federally illegal, and we're not going to let you just have it every time we catch you with it. You can't be intoxicated on anything and operate heavy machinery or a vehicle. That's public safety. There's already other laws that handle certain types of things. And for me, really, the bottom line is marijuana has always been approached the wrong way. We've been going after the user. There's a much bigger problem in my mind, and that is the illegal commerce aspect of the marijuana business. And you don't fix that by legalizing it and turning the state into drug dealers, selling out your principles just because you could profit from it. And I think that's really the stance personally that I've seen being taken by the Republican Party here is we're not talking about the personal liberty aspect. We're talking about the principled aspect of we're not going to become drug dealers to offset our tax responsibilities
when
it comes to revenue.
So last night, the lovely Christine and I went to Fort Collins to have dinner. We went to Totally 80s Pizza. It was great. We had a great time. But just walking from the car to the front door, and this pizza joint is in kind of a residential neighborhood, fairly nice. And I stepped out of the car, and all I could smell was pot. You know, so, I mean, there's societal impacts to this, too, that when you turn the state into a legal drug dealer, There's a whole bunch of impacts. So did we get all the legislative priorities, Frank, or we got a couple more?
There's a couple important ones that I do want to mention. But before I do, I just wanted to agree with both of you on the concepts that we're discussing here. And I'm not familiar with the author of The Concept of Harms.
I'll get you a copy. It's a great read. Great.
The basis book that I use to decide whether a crime has been committed or not, it goes clear back to Frederick Bastiat, The Law.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're familiar. I see the head shaking. But his definition is if there's an injured party created by somebody's actions, now you have a law breaking. Think about codes. Think about all the alleged policy that's out there that says, well, you have to pay a fine because you exceeded the speed limit or
seatbelts.
Exactly.
Great.
So who's the injured party? That's the question I ask people in this discussion. So if we use that for a basis, then we can further this discussion down the road into effective policy as to where the line should be. And I believe that decriminalization could be discussed in future party endeavors. Because there's got to be a middle line somewhere. Otherwise, we continue to turn to the government to solve our problems.
Exactly.
So, another legislative priority that's really important, we had the chairman of the Republic Review Committee. He hosted some legislators here, along with some other committee members here at State Party Office for some meals and some open discussion. There's been a bill or two that's been brought prior to and not including budget session, but that is, I'll summarize or describe Republic Review in this way. It's a large committee of people that really dig down into the Constitution, and they say it's a 10th Amendment view of the Constitution and application of. It's the audit of Wyoming's relationship with the federal government. Now, that's a deep dive, and it once you spend the time studying the Constitution and the scholars that interpret what this concept is basically saying it's a tool to fight some of the battles that we see the federal government being overreaching into the states. So that's why I say 10th Amendment, because it comes down to regulatory aspects, or you know, we the federal government are not going to fund you, the state of Wyoming, if you don't comply with this and that. But it goes way beyond that. It goes to every aspect of federal overreach, such as lands, et cetera.
Well, we're experiencing a couple of really big examples of federal overreach right now. The Rock Springs Resource RRP. Management Plan.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about government overreach. I mean, there's a real need to talk about Republic Review. And, well, frankly, they killed that bill like I don't even know how you want to describe it, but they slaughtered that bill yesterday. I mean, it went down. I think there was 40 no votes on it.
Well, it's very scary for the legislators, because Frank gave a really good like overview of Republic Review, but I worked with Scott on Republic Review, and I remember the last time that Bighorn County hosted the SCC, a great cartoon by one of our local family's children came out on what is Republic Review. And it was very simply explained. Hi, it was kind of Schoolhouse Rock style.
Sure.
Hi, I'm the Constitution. If the government's doing something that's not written on me, then it's a state's issue. And that's really what it comes down to, is why do we need a national or federal Department of Education when that's the state's right in the 10th Amendment? And if every state has its own State Department of Education, why does that exist? Why does the EPA exist? Why does the Department of Energy? If it's not enumerated in the Constitution as a function of government at the federal level, it must only be a function of or responsibility of the state or the people respectively. So we're talking about the first thing that happens is we flush a bunch of federal departments that trickle funds from the taxpayer through Congress into these bureaucratic agencies down into their equilateral state agencies, and the first thing they see is the money's going to go away.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say.
And then the control and power is going to go away, and then we're going to have to do it ourselves, and we're going to have to justify it. Because, yeah, the Department of the Interior may exist somewhere in the Constitution, but all these the BLM, that's not in there. We have a way of managing Wyoming lands.
Well, and I think one of the biggest overreaches that the federal government does with the states is money. There are so many things that have federal funds attached to them. And the reality is, Wyoming's got so much cash, we don't have to take that money. Like the Department of Education, 11% of the education budget comes from federal funding. 11%. We got $27 billion in the bank. I think we can foot the bill for the rest of it. But we've got to get people, you know, Republicans elected in Congress that are committed to getting us off of federal funds. I mean, I really think that needs to be a priority for every county. You know, make sure you're asking your representative, hey, what do you think about this federal funding business? Are you going to get rid of it? And if they say no, say, well, sayonara. So how, I mean, we've got the state convention coming up. When does that take place? And do you guys have a speaker picked out? Or tell me what's going to go on with that.
Yes, we do. Exciting news. April 18th through the 20th, Little America. For the first 2 days, Cheyenne Ice Arena for the 20th main convention, and we'll have our main convention that day. We'll have silent live auctions. We will also have, as keynote speaker, Harmeet Dhillon, National Committee Woman from California.
That's going to be cool.
Yes.
She's an amazing colleague on the RNC. What she is done for election integrity on the national scene and for our former president, and that's where most of the cases circulate around, is former President Trump. She's done amazing work and is a fearless litigator and skilled. So to have the opportunity to have her come to Wyoming and speak, I think she'll be a big hit and the engagement level will be very high.
No, that's going to be great.
No, it's really interesting to see not only a person of her caliber and capability, but, you know, all we hear is Wyoming for Wyomingites, Wyoming solutions to Wyoming problems. But it's really exciting when we bring in successful conservatives from either of the left coasts.
Yeah.
You know, we get a lot of guys, you know, James O'Keefe, Charlie Kirk a couple years ago. Every Wyoming conservative is really excited to see these people. And they're not what people say, you know, you have to be. Sorry, the redcoats say you have to be 19th generation Wyomingite with, you know, all these hats and all those different caps.
We could go on for about an hour how much that irritates me.
But when something really impactful happens, it's normally we're bringing in somebody who's been successful in the trenches, in the war zones that we're trying to avoid Wyoming becoming. So I'm really glad that she's the only people I see get more excited, or the only guests I see get more excited isn't really a guest. Anytime Harriet comes home, the whole state just goes crazy, which is about every 6 days if you clock it, because she's here all the time.
A lot. Way more than some of our other elected people. Well, Frank, we've pretty much come to the end of our time today. Is there anything else you'd like to point out while we've got your attention?
Just one last shout out to all the grassroots people out there. I know that you are red-blooded, Wyoming-loving, Constitution-loving, and this party is the vehicle. So don't doubt that we can reform this party further, and it can be the true voice of the grassroots. But to do that, you must go to your county caucus, your convention. You must speak through your county party meetings, through those leaders, get your ideas heard so that they can make their way up. That's how it works here. We at the state party leadership, we understand this. We work for you. We need to hear from you. We need to be directed, and we need to be funded by you. So please go to www.wyoming.gop. That's where all the news is. You can sign up for a digital newsletter, a mailed newsletter. You can see the dates of every county and state function, and you can donate. And I highly recommend you do, because the elitists have left the party. It's up to us now.
Well, with the state convention coming up, and I know the process intimately, but we had a very hard fight over the last few years, and I want especially the rural counties to make sure they're taking advantage of the fact that we changed the bylaws a few years ago to guarantee that every county gets one national convention delegate and one national convention alternate. That's a big commitment. There's a lot of money, quite a bit of time, and a little bit of inconvenience involved in that. But don't let that dissuade you, because every county that doesn't send a delegate forward by the time the state convention comes up, those become at-large delegates. And anybody could end up going and representing what would technically be your county or your area's voice. If you need help raising funds, get with your county chairman saying, hey, I want to be a national delegate or alternate. Let's have a couple fundraisers. Let's offset it. But that's one of the voices that we fought very hard for, to make sure everybody had an equal share. And I'd hate to see, this is one of the first presidential election years where we're having a convention under that rule. And I'd really like to see every county represented equally, because of, you know, the blood and treasure we put into making sure that that could happen.
Well, Frank, thanks for taking the time to sit down with us. And you already know you're welcome back here anytime.
Well, my pleasure. Appreciate both you gentlemen. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, that'll about do it for today's installment of the program. Have a good week, and we'll talk again tomorrow during a breaking news installment of Cowboy State Politics. Does everybody remember the whole Dan Zwanitzer situation, where there was a lot of questions about where he actually lived? Because where we ended up proving he was living was not in House District 43, it was in House District 10. And then the matter got brought before the House of Representatives, and they quickly brushed everything underneath the carpet. And nothing happened to Dan Zwanitzer. They even let him vote on whether or not to investigate him. Politics as usual in the swamp. Well, there's yet another member of the House of Representatives that there's some big-time questions whether he actually lives in his district or not. On tomorrow's breaking news installment of the program, I'm going to tell you who it is and all about it. So make sure that you tune in tomorrow to listen to that incredible story. But for now, from Cleveland, Ohio, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.